You're on Life Matters. We cover a very broad range of topics here. And today I'm asking you, what do you do to feel fabulous? Is there a special outfit or a piece of jewellery that you like to wear? I used to have an enormous, huge, wide hat with a giant twist of tulle around the top that draped down like a kind of gothic Mary Poppins, and it made me feel amazing. But maybe you find yourself in situations where you feel blending in is more appropriate, and fabulousness could be risky for you. Madison Moore is a cultural critic, DJ, and assistant professor of gender, sexuality, and women's studies. He's also written a book on fabulousness called Fabulous, The Rise of the Beautiful Eccentric. Madison, thank you for joining Life Matters.
Thank you so much for having me.
What is fabulousness? Can you pin it down to a definition?
Well, for me, fabulousness has to do with the way people decide to be themselves at last, to choose themselves at last. So it's, for me, it's about, you know, your favorite piece of jewelry and your favorite kind of item, but also how you decide to just wear it. Because there are some situations where you feel like you may not be able to, where you feel it's maybe inappropriate, or you just don't have even the courage to even try it out.
And is it just about looks or something deeper?
Yeah, so I think when in writing the book, I was trying to like appreciate the looks, right? So appreciate folks like my grandmother, who had a certain, you know, fabulous way of putting herself together, and with like the wigs and the makeup and the sequins. I know my love of sequins comes from her 100%. But I was trying to think about what is the thing that encourages people to do fabulousness. And so when I was writing the book, I've been really interested in trying to philosophize and theorize that aspect of it. You know, where does this need to express yourself this way come from?
And you're particularly looking at people of color in the States.
Yeah, that's right.
What did you find about where that does drive towards fabulousness comes from?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with being marginalized, being pushed out of the center, being constantly reminded that you don't deserve to exist, living in a society where your rights and sense of self are rolled back every day, where it might be difficult to, you know, I always say that fabulousness is about those who can go get a sandwich. So some people can like go take their lunch break and go pick up a Subway or go get like their lunch or whatever and be totally unbothered. For others, that same journey is more precarious and it isn't as certain. And it's met with, you know, catcalls and verbal and physical violence, perhaps. And so for me, that's the kind of, you know, the zhuzh of fabulousness, I think.
We recently did a story on this program about a young kid. He's 15, 16, and he lives in a very remote regional town. Mm-hmm. And he dresses in drag from time to time. Mm-hmm. And he says, I'm both those people, mm-hmm. and I need to be both those mm-hmm. people. But it sounds like his option in life is to leave that town if he wants to continue being those people. What kind of impact does that have on people long term, the people that you spoke to for the book, to have to kind of squash down that side of their personality?
Well, what's really interesting about what you said about this kid is you use the word need. And I think that part of my interest in fabulousness has a lot to do with the fact that people need to do this. Like, you're actually making a choice between, often between sort of safety and being who you really are or who you would like to be, at least at that moment, because identity is not stable. So I understand when he says that he's both of those people. And so in the course of writing the book, I found, in fact, that one of the recurring themes again and again with most of the interviews that I did, and I did about 60 of them, is that people always could find a moment when they made a switch. They could find a moment when they realized, hey, you know what? I don't really feel comfortable suppressing myself this way. I don't really feel, I'm ready to take that risk. I'm ready to leap outside of myself in a way. And there are so many stories, and that's what I found so reassuring and so kind of, what's the word? Impactful. Just hearing everybody's turning point, that there was a moment they could remember and pin down when they decided to stop trying to fit into norms that weren't made for them, and in fact decided to kind of live a voluminous, you know, and, you know, aesthetically kind of pleasing life.
And did you have a turning point like that, Madison?
Well, it's funny, when you write a book about fabulousness, people think you've sort of got the answers and you figured it all out.
You have to wear sequins every day.
I mean, I'm, you know, today kind of. But, you know, it's a journey. And fabulousness, it's not as, like this kid who said it's that they are kind of both. And it's never just that you wake up and you're fabulous and that's it forever and ever and ever. Sometimes you don't have the mental energy to do it. Sometimes you don't want to do it. Sometimes you just want to go get some socks or whatever from the store and run back home. You don't want to be bothered. You don't want to be harassed. And so I want to make sure that, you know, when we're talking about fabulousness, we're realizing that it is kind of like an accordion. You know, it's sometimes you do it and sometimes you don't. And it's still you, right? And yeah, it's about how much energy you have on that particular day to do it.
Let's talk a little bit more about the history of asserting your right to be visible, because there's such a strong tradition in the States of people of color saying, I'm going to use dress to to make these statements. Mm-hmm. I thought of maybe zoot suits or the black power uniform. How does fabulousness fit into that tradition, or is it something new?
Well, I would say it certainly does. I mean, I would say that when you look at black dandies, or when you look at the zoot suit, or when you look at the Black Panther kind of style choices, it is about asserting yourself in a space that says that you shouldn't exist. You don't get legal representation. You don't deserve to be here. We're not going to give you clothing. We're going to hand you the scraps, and then you make something beautiful out of it anyway, right? And so I guess the question that I always ask, and that really drives this work, is how are art and beauty created in states of duress? What is it about kind of being in a state of emergency? And by the way, black and brown and queer and marginalized people live every day in a state of emergency. What is it about that emergency that gives such, again, voluminous and aesthetically pleasing objects, whether that be drag or cooking or, you know, aesthetics in general? What is it about that duress that leads to that? And that's really the question that has been driving my thinking about fabulousness, and that drives the book as well.
And what conclusions did you come to? Was it just the basic human need to say, I deserve to exist in this world, or something more?
Well, I think it's both that you deserve to exist, but also acknowledging that it's okay to look at the surface, and it's okay to embrace the surface. We have this idea, you know, what's called, you know, the mind-body split, where somehow if something is of the mind, then it's way more serious, it's way more heavy, it's rich, it's a real kind of thing, real in scare quotes, of course. But if it's of the body, if it's artifice, if it's beauty, if it's this, then somehow it isn't seen as serious. Oh, you're wasting your time. You should be doing real work, you know, like this. And I want us to remember that we are tactile and visual beings, humans. We like to look at stuff. We like to touch things. We like to engage with our spaces in this way. And so I think when you live in a world under capitalism, where it's kind of always reminding us and kind of stripping away any trace of individuality in a lot of ways, I'm interested in folks who choose the different path, who decide this isn't for me and I'm going to do it this way now.
There's also some really interesting tensions about this movement of fabulousness existing within capitalism, aren't there? Because there's also been a long tradition of the majority discomfort with minority peoples having money, not being in poverty, and appearing to be well-dressed and moving up into the middle class. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering how that plays out with fabulousness. Is that a strand of the drive towards it?
It's a great point. And when you look throughout certain points in history, you find that there were these sumptuary laws that basically, for instance, if you were not royal, you weren't allowed to wear purple, for instance. Or, you know, that there's a philosopher called Jorg Simmel, who was writing in the early 20th century, who was talking about fashion. He said, basically, fashion changes so quickly so that by the time, you know, working class people catch up with it, it's already moved on to somewhere else.
But now we have Uniqlo.
Now we have Uniqlo. Now we have fast fashion. Now we have things online. And so it's a different kind of moment. But I still think that idea that fashion changes because by the time people catch up on it, it's moved on to something else, is still relevant. And also you have scholars or writers like Dick Heptega and Subculture, who writes that, you know, subculture fashion, by the time you get it at H&M or Uniqlo, it already started in some club or some kind of, you know, queer space somewhere, but now it's for sale. You can buy it. So it's kind of this constant, you know, hamster wheel from the lower subculture spaces to the kind of high street. I think as well, you know, when we're talking about fabulousness, it has to do with creativity and doing it on your own terms. I was interested in this philosopher, Thorstein Veblen, who was writing in 1899 about conspicuous consumption and kind of the performance of luxury, really, and that when you have money, that you that waste is how you kind of display that. So you buy the big house, you buy two or three big houses, you have huge feasts. Of course, you can't eat all the food, but you do it anyway because it's a display of your sort of power. And so I was interested in what it means when people who don't have those resources are doing basically the same thing, right? And so when you take up space through fashion, but your look maybe costs $20, how do you square that with folks who spend, who spent $200,000 on a couture look, for instance, or even $2,000, you know?
The other thing that struck me about the late capitalist modern world is we seem to have this discomfort with narcissism, the selfie mm-hmm. culture and things like that, which I imagine must make it a bit difficult to be fabulous and perform fabulousness in some places.
Well, I mean, I think that selfie culture and Instagram are both and, right? So technology can always be used for good, but also evil as well, not good things always. And one of the things that's been so interesting in thinking about fabulousness is selfie culture, and is the fact that you might be I'm a part of a number of kind of selfie threads where people will say, "I'm feeling low today. Let's start a selfie thread." And they'll start one. Or someone will say, "I'm feeling low, show me your best outfits." And so then all these people are like sharing themselves in this kind of space. And so I think, and as much as it is and can be seen as kind of like narcissistic, that it also is about community, and it can also be about showing that you're not alone. And by the way, what's wrong with a little bit of narcissism when you are in a body that you don't see yourself on television, you're not in the magazines, you're told you're not beautiful enough, you don't get to exist, something's wrong with your hair, texture, you should straighten it. You know, what's wrong with actually loving yourself publicly?
And does it work for people who whose bodies don't fit the social ideals in other ways? Say they're mm-hmm. older, they have disabilities?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I want, right? I want a space where people feel free to be exactly who they want to be at that moment without being ridiculed. I mean, you know what? Like, so many times when people come to my apartment or whatever and they look at my things or they say, "Oh, I wish I could wear whatever this is." And my question is, well, who is telling you can't do it? Who? And I'm waiting on them to give me an answer. Who is it, actually? And I think that question reveals, you know, really the power of norms and systems, right? That, like, if you do decide to step out of the box, then you know that you could be ridiculed. And so, yeah.
Ridicule seems so mild compared to what some of the things people suffer yep. when they
yes.
appear outside the social norms. And you have some really powerful interviews in your book. I'm wondering if you could tell us, Madison Moore, the four traits of fabulousness that you isolated in the book.
Well, I would say, first of all, it doesn't take a lot of money or money at all. It's about creativity and about realizing that you might have only a few things, but you can create something out of nothing. I would say the second thing is that it's a kind of, the term I use is critical mascara, so that it's about, so mascara you might imagine as something that, like, you put on the face, it's artifice, and it makes things maybe more beautiful, more interesting. And the critical part is the part that is kind of critiquing systems and norms and whatnot. So I think that critical mascara is a way to be critical of these things and look great at the same time. And then I think thirdly, it is about an aesthetic practice that comes from the state of emergency, that comes from the fact that you are suffering under such PTSD of being a brown or trans or queer body, that you fight for whatever piece of air that you can have, whatever piece of air and agency that you can have. And then I guess finally, I would say that it is about reminding ourselves that we can be pleasureful, and that we can have pleasure, and that we can have fun, and that there is something amazing about feeding yourself this way. Of course, the downside is that you can become entertainment to people who want to say, "Oh, like, yes, queen," or, like, you know, snap at you or take photos of you without your permission on public transportation, to only then ridicule you later or make fun of you in their comment section on their private Instagram or whatever. And so it's the both and, really. And so I think that is, as I mentioned earlier, the kind of accordion. That for me is the way of thinking about fabulousness, that it is this kind of both and, that it's pleasureful, that it provides all these things at the same time, that there is considerable risk, and also, that people can you can be verbally or physically abused.
And so is your view, Madison Moore, that one day fabulousness will kind of spread and be for everyone, or is it more about creating a different kind of marginal space that's more within your control?
When I was in the early stages of writing the book, I was having a conversation with a friend, and he mentioned the movie Hunger Games, and how in the Hunger Games there's like the kind of working class side and then like the fabulous side, and they're kind of all in like these looks and they kind of look amazing, this and that. And we were talking about it, and it was like, it would be so boring if everybody was fabulous, because then being normal or the norm or whatever would be, or so, you know, being dressed down would be the thing that would be fabulous. And so I don't know if I want a world where everyone is fabulous. What I want is for people to realize what are the ways that they might be suppressing themselves. And if they can take that step and realize, you know what, I'm going to wear my earring to work today, or I'm going to, you know, try out a new style or do this thing that I told myself that I couldn't do. I'm going to give myself permission to do that. That's what I want, is for people to realize how they might be suppressing themselves and then thereby give themselves permission to take certain style risks.
It really annoys me how only the bad guys get to look fabulous in films. It just seems so wrong. Madison Moore, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Madison Moore is a cultural critic, DJ, and assistant professor of gender, sexuality, and women's studies. He's written a book called Fabulous, The Rise of the Beautiful Eccentric, and he's in Australia to speak at the School of Life in Melbourne. I'm Hilary Harper. You're listening to Life Matters.